And even if the person needs, not for us, the angel was coming by, you know, also lost in the desert with some rest. And found us. Or maybe selling bread to whoever is lost in the desert. For $1 million. So it is extremely kind, isn't it? So it is same, it's no different. We are paying, you know. If the person is, if just made the bread, not for us, we still asking for money, same like everyday life. And yet it's very kind. So we will recognize the kindness because we create a certain condition now, meditation. But this is the very, but the point is, it's not that we are not starving now. The potential is there. There is no one to make bread, we starve. If there is no one to make drink, if there is no one to make clothes, we die of cold, you know? So we take for granted, but in reality, to stay, you know, in a sheltered place, everything, medicine, anything that we can think of is totally due to the kindness of others, even if we pay. Without this, our life will be like hell. Without this, our life will be extremely difficult. So we cannot talk of self-made person. Even the self-made person, someone is to come and buy things, isn't it? How can you say you're self-made? If no one comes and buy your things, how can you say you're self-made? It is all of someone. Everything is dependent. Depends on the rising. So we totally depend upon each other. So anyway, this is what this method, this tradition teach. If you like the philosophy of it or the scholar of it. So everyone therefore is kind to us. And so because one sees the kindness, so it's therefore either depends the individual. To some maybe it's easier to look at how everyone has been our mother. Or others they may be more inclined to this type of mentor. See how everyone is always, kind to us. So it depends the individual. So but whatever the case, both fulfill the same purpose, the same thing. By seeing the kindness, one feels close to everyone, and when they see them suffering, wish them to be free from suffering. Yeah? You see, both ways, whatever way you take, this way, that way, you come to the point that you see the kindness, so they wish to repay the kindness. And when you see them suffering, you feel something, you feel the need, what is the need? To do something. So then, by whatever method, so when one generates his mind, so one generates the mind of enlightenment, so they achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. So having generated that mind, the mind of enlightenment, then one engages in certain practice, engages the so-called six perfections. But when one generates that mind of enlightenment, bodhicitta mind, the wish to achieve perfect enlightenment, is not that traditionally, finished. They say one has to vow oneself. When Buddha Shakyamuni as a bodhisattva, when first generated the mind of enlightenment. Himself, to the Pankara Buddha, to the Buddha of that age, he promised, he vowed himself, to achieve that goal. So, it's not just enough to get the mind of enlightenment, then one is to vow oneself to engage in the practice of bodhisattva. One vowed oneself. And that's what is, we have the acceptance, like in the Bodhicharyavatara. First, in the first chapter we have the benefit of bodhicitta, and then there is the second chapter, I think, is the acceptance, the ritual of taking the bodhisattva vow. We have to vow, So in general, therefore, we have the two, the wishing bodhicitta and the engaging bodhicitta. Of these, the so-called engaging, the wishing bodhicitta is simply the wish. How wonderful if we can achieve that goal, Buddhahood. So it is said that one can talk of two types of wishing bodhicitta, the one with ritual and the one without ritual. The one without ritual is the bodhicitta, the wishing bodhicitta, simply, you know, like when you recite, you know, Sangeshwaran Sogeshwaran Allah, or when you just wish a wonderful, just thinking, a wonderful, potentially perfect enlightenment. Or the wishing bodhicitta with a ritual, when you imagine that mind, simply, how wonderful it achieved perfect enlightenment for the benefit of sentient beings. And then, in front of the Lama, in front of somebody in a ritual, you generate the thought, I will never give up that mind. I will never, when you think, I will never give up that mind, so that is with a ritual. Or then the other type of bodhicitta, the engaging bodhicitta, where you actually engage. One engage in the so-called six perfection, the practice of, that leads to that state, Buddhahood. So one vow oneself, you know, so in front of a Lama, in front of the teacher, so as a witness, or we call all Buddhas a Bodhisattva, as a witness, you know, to witness the promise, I must achieve perfection, I will, you know, for the sake of all sentient beings, I will engage, you know, in the practice of the Bodhisattva, the six perfection, to achieve that goal. So, anyway, having generated his mind, having generated the mind of enlightenment through whatever means, whatever method, having generated that mind, then it marks the beginning of the so-called path of accumulation. So, anyway, path of, you know, the five paths and the ten grounds. The path and grounds, this is, in general, we can talk of path and ground of perfection vehicle, non-tantric teachings, and also part and ground of tantric teachings. So this is part and ground of the so-called perfection vehicle, non-tantric teachings. This is in relation with regard to a bodhisattva, part and ground. So in Buddhism, in general, we can talk of the three beings. I don't know if it's three beings or like, you know, the hearers. The hero Shravaka, the solitary realizer, Pratyeka, and the Bodhisattva. So with regard to the first two, the Shravaka, heroes, and the Pratyeka Buddha, the solitary realizer, that the goal, and whose goal is, you know, perfect liberation, nirvana. They all also go through the so-called five paths. So with regard to the five paths, so the five paths leading to the enlightenment of a hero, the enlightenment of Pratyeka Buddha, solitary realizer, or the enlightenment of a bodhisattva. All these three things, both have the so-called five paths. They go through path of accumulation, preparation, path of seeing, path of meditation, and the path of normal learning. So on top of this, the bodhisattva goes, you know, through the so-called ten grounds. So when one generates, with regard to the so-called shravaka or hearer, the path of accumulation is when you generate renunciation. When the person first generates renunciation, that is, it marks the beginning of path of accumulation. And with regard to, you know, for the bodhisattva, with regard to the bodhisattva, it is the mind generation, the generation of bodhicitta, that marks the beginning of the path of accumulation. And these two, whether it is renunciation or whether it is bodhicitta, they have one common thing, that is suffering. So suffering becomes, it is the source of renunciation, and suffering is the source, the condition to the compassion. So without meditating on suffering, without understanding, or as Buddha said, or as Buddha put it, realizing suffering, see suffering as suffering. So Buddha didn't say there is suffering, there is the cause of suffering, there is the path, there is cessation. Or this cessation is the path. You know, Buddha said, look, see suffering, recognize suffering as suffering, recognize the cause of suffering as cause of suffering. Therefore, the realization of suffering is a big realization. So it's not easy. It's called a realization. Animal can experience the suffering as we do, you know? But the animal cannot realize suffering, cannot think about that. So that's wrong. What's wrong with me? Animal, they can't think that's wrong with me. They can't wonder about suffering. We can. So we as a human being can see, you know, can realize the suffering, suffering in the sense, can generate the thought of what is, what's wrong with me. What is there is not working. So we can see, we can realize suffering. So when we realize suffering, when we see, when one sees how bad is suffering, because it's not that we, as we say, it's not easy to realize how bad is suffering. We experience suffering, but it's not easy to realize how bad is suffering. You know, how really bad it is. It's like a person who is very sick, but he doesn't really know how bad it is. You know? We can easily be very sick, but we don't realize how really bad it is. That's possible, isn't it? So it is only when we realize how bad is the suffering, the sickness, we have to realize, oh, that's sickness. We really realize the sickness, so we go to the doctor. You know? So we may feel sick, but not really realize how bad it is. So suffering, therefore, we feel the suffering, we experience the suffering, but we don't really know how bad it is. You know? So therefore, Buddha means that. See, realize suffering as suffering. And when you realize that, when we see how bad it is, how suffering, how bad it is, then the wish to be free from it, the wish to put an end to it. Notice that they call it is the mind of disgust. You know, they say the sign of renunciation is the mind when one is disgusted with suffering. You know, when you want to put an end to it, that is the sign of renunciation. So, on one end, with regard to one's own liberation, so with regard to our own liberation, we must generate, you know, renunciation, and that is understand suffering. And then, once we understand suffering, once we really understand suffering on us, once we understand suffering with regard to us, then we can also understand suffering with regard to other men, other people, you know, other living beings, others. How bad it is. This is very interesting. For example, we know how bad is depression when we felt like that, isn't it? There are few things that we feel ourselves, but when other people feel, we don't really identify with it. But there are certain type of sickness that we feel, we experience, and then other people too experience, we know how bad it is. And so we feel, you know, sympathetic. So the suffering, suffering is the base of both, you know, the cause of both, renunciation and compassion, bodhicitta. And so, if it is with regard to a person, the person who wishes to achieve one's own liberation only, that he marks, you know, the beginning of the accumulation of a person, of a Jnabhaka. So then the part of accumulation, you know, when one generates his mind, you know, spontaneous, you know, it's a spontaneous thought to achieve perfect enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Then, in order to achieve that goal, what do we need? In order to achieve that goal, eventually one needs to remove all the affliction, our own affliction. We cannot teach someone to swim if we don't know how to swim. You know? So first we have to realize, remove our own affliction. You know? First we have to remove our own ignorance. First we have to purify our own mind. And so, to remove our ignorance, here we're talking about two things. You know, they talk about two obstruction. The obstruction to liberation, the obstruction to omniscience. Basically, we're talking about ignorance. So what removes ignorance is the wisdom. The wisdom realizing ultimate reality, the wisdom realizing selflessness. It is the self, it is the mind that clings, the mind that grasps, the mind that holds to an inherent existent self, that is the very cause of these two obstructions. the instruction to liberation and instruction to resistance. So from then, therefore, we start to accumulate. It marks the beginning of the path of accumulation once we liberate the mind of enlightenment. And then from then, it is called the path of accumulation because we begin to accumulate what? Listening, studying, listening, thinking, and so forth about what? About the very thing that liberates us, about the very thing that leads us to awakening, that is wisdom. So we accumulate, therefore, accumulate listening, the teaching on emptiness. We think about emptiness. Listening, you know, teaching on emptiness, read, whatever. So we become familiar with the with this topic, you know, we become familiar with these teachings on emptiness. And to the point that one that one has a good understanding of emptiness. Understanding that which does not mean, you know, realization of emptiness. Understanding. So, in order to really meditate, in order to place the mind, and this is true, and so for anything that we meditate on. In reality, before one meditates, everything must be clear. Normally, when we meditate for the sake of making things clear, which is okay. You know, it is, there are many times we meditate, the time there are things that we can, there are things that we can simply think about, by just walking, sitting somewhere, and drinking a cup of tea, just thinking. Instead, we sit, and, but we have to deal, at the same time, we have to deal with our bodily pain, and the confusion of maybe something happened yesterday, you lost a job, and this and that, then you are thinking about something, yeah, trying to meditate. You know, it's very difficult. You know, it's impossible. We're trying to understand the topic. So, to try to understand some topic, it's not really necessary to sit like this, which is very difficult. You know, you become irritated, full of pain everywhere, we cannot think properly. So, the real sitting, you know, the real sitting, the bodily posture of thought, sitting like that, it is particularly, I'm not saying you can't, you know, meditate when you sit like that. But the real purpose, by the time you sit like that, everything is clear, so you place the mind. So one place and familiarize. Meditation or gongyak is to familiarize with. So to familiarize with, let's say, impermanence. So we read about impermanence, we think about impermanence, we go around and we see things change, and so we generate some ascertaining of it. We ascertain things are really momentary, and so forth. Then we sit, and one place the mind without distraction on that understanding. Yeah? On the whatever understanding of impermanence, one place the mind there. Yeah? So without distraction. Yeah? And from time to time, you know, in the back of your mind, you analyze again, but you know what impermanence is. Yeah? So anyway, in the practice of accumulation, one trying to familiarize with emptiness, to really understand well emptiness, perfectly. And when emptiness is well understood, perfectly well understood, then one places the mind. So then one places, there is no more doubt. All doubt are dispelled. Mm-hmm. By the time you really meditate on emptiness, the doubt, to move into the path of so-called path of preparation. The path of preparation is to prepare oneself. You know, it's called the path of preparation. That it prepares for the actual seeing, the path of seeing, the path of accumulation, the path of preparation, the path of seeing. So the path of preparation, it prepares to see. Or as Buddha said, the best is no seeing. To really not see. You know, the seeing is to really not see. To see that there is no self. Yeah? So during the path of accumulation, one has generated perfect understanding of that accumulation. And then the path of preparation, you know, marks the achievement of the path of preparation where one generates first single pointedness of the mind, and based on single pointedness of the mind, one generates samadhi, calm abiding. And based on that insight, you know, insight into emptiness, you know, insight, and a real insight into a real experience of it. So, which is different from understanding of it. You know, with samadhi, based on samadhi one generates insight into emptiness doesn't mean understanding of it, because you have already understood emptiness. If one has not understood emptiness, how can you really meditate on emptiness? We think about emptiness. But the real meditation, the real inside of emptiness is the exia, to feel it, emptiness. But you can feel emptiness only when it is understood. So having therefore understood well emptiness, you know, during the practice of accumulation, and in study, blah, 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 in debate and so forth, then based on samadhi, calm abiding, you know, a mind that is totally, you know, firm, then one repeatedly focus on that field, on that understanding of emptiness. Focus on that perfect understanding of emptiness, single point with it, again and again and again. And with samadhi you can dwell on emptiness for years, for months, for weeks, for years. So you really penetrate. It is for the sake of really penetrating that meaning. Penetrating that. If we say the meaning, it is better to penetrate, to really feel constantly. You feel and you become one with emptiness. So you feel emptiness. And it is better to use to feel emptiness, because then if you look at the path of preparation, it prepares, you know, preparing oneself to actually totally emerge, totally, you know, become the mind and emptiness itself, like mixing water into water. In the path of preparation there are four levels or stages. The first is the heat. You know, the path of preparation, there are four levels. The first is heat, warmth. So the wisdom, you know, the fire of the wisdom, realizing emptiness approaching. The total immersion of the realization of emptiness itself is like mixing water into water. So the wisdom, the fire of wisdom is approaching. So it's called heat. And then there is the heat and the peak. So all these, there is the heat, peak, forbearance, and supreme on the inquiries. So all this is nothing else than leading to a direct experience of emptiness. So during the path of preparation, one realizes emptiness. It is from the path of preparation that one reads, when one calls, says, realization of emptiness. You know, sometimes in English, if someone understands emptiness, we say, we realize emptiness. That is different. Understanding emptiness in Dharma terms is not realizing emptiness. It's very, very different. So the realization of emptiness is to feel, you know, to feel emptiness. And so at the beginning of the so-called realization of emptiness, during the path of preparation, that one is approaching. So the mind that realizes emptiness and the object. There is, we can talk of two things, subject emptiness and object emptiness. So, the object and the subject emptiness eventually, at the so-called path of seeing, they merge into each other. Like, as I say, you know, like mixing water into water. There is no more difference between object emptiness and the mind realizing it. Become one thing. But at the time of, during the path of preparation, it is not so. It is a dual. So, sometimes also people say it is conceptual realization of emptiness. It's not. The conceptual realization of emptiness is when you study emptiness, you have a good understanding of emptiness that you can teach unmistaken, perfect, yeah? Understanding of emptiness. That is conceptual. Yeah? Perfect understanding of emptiness that you can teach it, you understand it well. That is conceptual. But at the time of the practical preparation, it's not conceptual. They call it conceptual understanding of emptiness, but actually, so it is simply dual. It's still dual understanding of emptiness, because the mind that realizes emptiness itself is still, there's a sense, the meditator, by the way, if you draw a bomb, you know, the meditator, you can move that person. The mind of samadhi is so stable. You know, so stable, so sharp. So there is no really concept in that mind. Yeah, not in the sense what we may think of. So there is no gross, there is only emptiness. But the thing is, although there is only emptiness and nothing else, still there is a sense of difference, the mind and the emptiness itself. And so, and how does it? Therefore, it is by focusing on that meaning, lack of any resistance, emptiness, again and again and again and again and again, based on samadhi, the mind that constantly, you know, focus on that meaning, that eventually come to the point that one totally emerge, become one. The mind realizes emptiness, emptiness itself is one thing. And when that happens, it is called the path of sin. You see, for here, part of seeing is nothing to do, I guess, we understand, is nothing to do with our eyes, yeah? It's a mental thing. But even we call part of seeing, there is even mentally, there's nothing to see, really. Yeah? It's not that one sees, rather one is, as we say, the empty is already realized. Yeah? We can say that, you know, we can say that emptiness has been seen already at the part of accumulation. You know, we can see that. Consider emptiness being seen at the point of accumulation, and the point of preparation one familiarizes with it, and at the point of seeing one totally experiences it. You know, total experience of emptiness. And then it is from that level onwards, from there, that one starts to remove the actual job, you know? The actual job. The thing of removing the affliction starts there. So therefore it's not that when one sees, when one realizes the wisdom, when one generates the wisdom of the emptiness, when we see it, it's not that we can rest. It's not that it's finished, or no, we can rest. That is the beginning of, that is the beginning of removing of the afflictions. So by removing the afflictions, not remove the ignorance, removing that what ignorance caused attachment, anger. And so is what is to be, so what one removes, what one eliminates at the part of seeing is particularly not the mind that grasps to inherent resistant self. So the ignorance is the misconception of a self that is to be removed. And so it is the misconception of a self that causes attachment, that causes anger. Basically it's really what causes first the misconception of the I, of the self, what really causes attachment. In base of attachment, anger. And then everything else. From jealousy to pride, blah blah blah, all. And so one slowly, you know, it removes that. So if it, you might know, so we may wonder why it takes, you know, so long time to why it takes to remove, you know, this ignorance. It's not enough to realize it. It's not enough to see it. It's to be removed, and it takes a long time. You know, so why? Because we have the talk of two types of, you know, ignorance. The ignorance that we know, the ignorance grasping to a resistant self. So there is the ignorance which is called the intellectual acquired ignorance. And there is the ignorance that is called innate ignorance. So there is the intellectual acquired mind grasping to a resistant I, self. And there is the innate mind that grasps to a truly existing power. So the innate one is the one of all life, all sentient beings. From the smallest insect, dog, you know, hell being, you know, to the human being, to divine being, all, we all sense, we all have this instinct, you know, this innate sense of a self. So we all have this sense of a self. Then, on top of that, you know, there is the intellectual acquired. the intellectual acquired is the sense of a self that we learn in a particular system. So if we become, you know, as a Christian, I guess, as a Hindu or whatever, we learn about the soul. You know, they teach the soul. They teach. So we already have, you know, the soul, the self, the Atma, you know, Buddha to the Anatma, same thing. So they teach, we already have a sense of self in it. On top of that, it is reinforced by certain tenets. You know? We study certain tenets, we come across certain tenets where they actually teach that. The existence of a self, the existence of an I, with many, many reasons. The I exists because of this and that. There is a self because blah, blah, blah. And so it reinforces and becomes stronger and stronger and stronger, this sense of I. So first is to be removed that, the so-called intellectual acquired sense of self. And that is removed during the path of sin. So during the path of sin, now one may, when we study emptiness, for example, one may wonder, but don't we remove the misconception of a self that we have acquired through study or through following a certain system already before? Yes. But what we when we study the topic of emptiness, and when you realize, when you understand emptiness, so at that moment you don't believe in that. You don't believe in a self because you have understood there is no such a thing as a self. Yeah, intellectually, but understood there is no such a thing as a self. But the removal of the intellectual acquired grasping into a self that is achieved, that is done during the part of seeing, is that one removes the potency, the potential. We may have understood emptiness, we may have understood emptiness well in this life to study, but then we may die, we may be born in some place, you know, teaching a particular system, teaching the existence of a self, of an Atma. And again, even though we have understood emptiness, but we have not removed the potential, you know, for believing in self. We have not removed the potential for believing in ourselves. Therefore, we may be born again somewhere, and we have the tendency again to believe in it. Is it clear? So, therefore, although we may understand that there is no such a thing, but the real removal of that potency will occur at the part of sin. So at the part of sin, one will abandon forever the tendency to believe again in such a thing as a self. So the feeling of a self innate is still there. It's still strong, it has to be purified, let's say, yeah? This is still there, I translate to say. That sense of a self, even at the time of realizing emptiness directly, is still there, it has to be removed. One has to familiarize again and again. And so from there, it starts, you know, from the seed, then one starts the first of the ten women, the first of the ten crowns. So part of seed, first crown, and first crown, one eliminates this intellectual acquired. And then slowly, slowly, from the second round to the seventh or the eighth round, one again starts to the job of removing the innate grasping to ourself. So because our mind, it has familiarized with, you know, the concept of a self, it is in our mind since beginningless time. Even though such a thing does not really exist, but the ignorant that believe it exists. Yeah? Even though such a self does not exist, the ignorance that believes in it exists since beginningless time. And so our mind, it is like a piece of cloth that has been soaked in oil. So it is very difficult to remove the stain, isn't it? If you want to remove the stain of oil in a piece of cloth, you have to go through many, many certain processes of, you know, of cleaning. Yeah, you have to wash it again and again with different kinds of detergent and so forth. So the same. The mind is not enough to simply see such a thing does not exist. So the tendency is there, very strong. So therefore, as one, that's why then from the path of seeing, first ground, then one moves to the path of meditation. So from the second ground to the eighth ground, that is called the path of meditation. So the path of meditation starts. Yeah. So the path of meditation starts from the second ground. Let's put it like that. And so one meditates on what? On the same thing. Emptiness, lack of inherent existence, you know, based on karma abiding, inside into that. Again and again, repeatedly. Because as we have familiarized, with ignorance since beginningless time, so we have to familiarize with the opposite of it for a long time again. So, as we, therefore one has to familiarize with emptiness. So what is the interesting thing is, if we look, there is dependency. The imprint is very strong. If we look at attachment, for example, attachment, how bad is attachment, is not really difficult to understand how bad it is. It is very difficult to eliminate attachment, not because it's difficult to understand, but because of the tendency is very strong. So, when you know our addiction, attachment, addiction is same thing, yeah? So whatever addiction we have, whether it is to food, or to people, or to drug, or whatever, why it is difficult? Because the tendency. It is an imprint, very strong. So we have familiarized with it. So we have familiarized with that thing, and so we need to familiarize with the opposite of it. So no matter how well we understand our bad attachment, there is a point when we simply have to simply practice detachment. Simply familiarize with detachment. So to reduce, so as familiarization with detachment becomes stronger and stronger, that familiarization with attachment becomes less and less. As the familiarization with the lack of inherent existence becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and stronger, the tendency to believe in ourselves is weaker and weaker and weaker. You know? Even though we have understood already. So therefore it is in the part of so-called part of preparation, that's one, part of meditation, that one. Meditate. But in what sense one meditate? Part of preparation. Part of preparation means familiarization. The path of familiarization. That's what Gom, no? Gomlam, you know, part of meditation. To familiarize. Gom is to familiarize. Gomya, to familiarize. So one familiarize with the newly experienced. The newly experienced, new experience. Familiarize with that. To the point that the old one, the ignorant one is forgotten, is gone, is removed. So one goes through, if you are tired, just make a sign, you can stop. Move something, in the part of so-called part of meditation, that is the actual removal of the innate afflictions, together with what affliction caused, together with attachment, anger, and so forth. It removes the affliction. So, when we talk about afflictions, we are also talking what affliction caused. Affliction, cyclic existence. So, in Buddhism, as we know, we talk about cyclic existence. What is the goal is to really get out of cyclic existence, put an end to cyclic existence, put an end to be conceived, the born again and again. That is the goal. Yeah? Cycling due to ignorance, affliction and action. One is born again and again in the various realms of existence. So by purifying the mind, by realizing emptiness, purifying the affliction and therefore stopping karma, what put an end to cyclic existence. So what is cyclic existence? So cyclic existence, we talk about the three roads. You know, the desire realm, the formless realm, desire realm, form realm, and formless realm. These are the place of rebirth. Cyclic existence, place of rebirth, where we are born, we are either born in the desire realm, or in the form realm, or in the form realm. So within the desire realm, you know, within the desire world, there are the six realms. There are the realm of hell beings, angry ghost beings, animal beings, human beings, and the two type of, you know, divine beings, the demigods. Which sometimes, in some other tradition, the demigods actually are placed in the lower realm, because they do experience something. Anyway, so that is the place of birth, the three realms. So therefore one purifies the affliction that are related to the rebirth in these three worlds. So in these three worlds. So one starts from the second ground up to the eighth ground. And so when one starts to purify, the ignorance and affliction, you go, there are 81 steps. There are 81 steps within 9 levels. So now it becomes a bit technical. So the 9 levels is another way of classifying the three worlds. The three worlds. So the first level is the desire realm. So the desire realm, and then within the form realm there are four levels. You know, first concentration, second concentration, third concentration, fourth concentration with five. And then the formless realm, there is infinite space, infinite consciousness, nothingness, and the peak of psychic existence. I think it's called the peak of psychic existence. You make 9. So, from the second ground to the eighth ground, as one removes this innate affliction, it does in 81 steps. So, each of these 9 levels, he has 9 steps each. Nine steps each, makes 81, yeah? And so these 8 steps on each level, which are 9, they are divided. Well, how comes to be 9? You have, with regard to affliction, we have the big, the big, small. So the big, the big, middling, the big, little, the big, small. Then you have the middling big, the middling big, the middling small. And then you have the small big, the small middling, and the small. So it's 9. So each step, level is 9 of these steps. So, 1 of the desire realm, 4 of the formless form realm, and 4 of formless. And so the meditator in the part of meditation is removing, first the stage removes all the big bits, then all the middling bit, then all the small bit, like this. You know?